This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay your ship bare.
Adele, but actually, that's not how you pronounce it, Ed. You know how you pronounce her name? Adele. Adele. I'm just reading a story. She's been allowing Adele, but it's really pronounced Adele. So there you go. Now we know something more about Adele. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, November the 2nd, and we got a lot going on. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Katie Tubb of the Heritage Foundation, and we're going to talk to her about how the Biden administration knows full well that it is blocking answers to the gas crisis. In fact, they even admit it. They admit it in their reports. So stay tuned for that. And ominous warnings between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and between North and South Korea. We are going to take a look. So stay tuned for that as well. And if Republicans take back the House and the Senate next week, it might be due to white suburban women. Have you heard about that? We are going to tell you why white suburban women are a big factor in this election come Tuesday. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a goodie for you, the top 10 best places to retire next year. Indeed. So stay tuned for that. By the way, we always want you to listen to Senior Voice America. I think they've got a, no, I guess they don't. All right. We learn things every day. Anyway, I want to say that we got a lot going on, and this is kind of scary. Saudi Arabia has shared intelligence with the United States, and it's warning of an imminent, listen to this, an imminent attack from Iran on targets in the kingdom. Now, we are backing and defending Saudi Arabia, despite what Saudi Arabia has been doing to us with the oil situation. We sell equipment to Saudi Arabia. We've given them our word that we are going to back them. So now here comes Iran. And they've elevated this thing to a big alert level, apparently. So we'll see where all of that goes. They have not provided a lot of detail on it. But Saudi officials say Iran is poised to carry out attacks on both the kingdom and in Iraq, in an effort to distract attention from all the trouble that's going on with the domestic tranquility, you might say, inside Iran. So that is a scary scenario. In the meantime, North Korea has fired more than 20 missiles today in the direction of South Korea, and at least one of those missiles landed near the rivals' tense sea border. Now, South Korea retaliated by firing its own missile, sending some citizens to evacuate in underground shelters. Now, we're getting, between Iran and North Korea right now, we're getting some dangerous. You know, we're all concerned about our election here and what's going on internally. But what's going on the other side of the world? And we have a direct connection with these countries, South Korea and Saudi Arabia. So we better keep our eyes open. Now, the launches between these two countries, North and South, came hours after North Korea threatened to use nuclear weapons to get the U.S. and South Korea to, quote, pay the most horrible price in history. Now, we usually just kind of let that rhetoric go, right? But one of these days, that little idiot that runs North Korea is going to do something. He's just crazy enough to do something like that on his own. Because that country, they're getting desperate. They are totally shut off from the rest of the world, you know. Totally shut off. Many, I don't know what percentage, but many of the North Koreans are literally starving to death under his regime. It's just about the worst place you can live in the world is North Korea. So when you're that desperate and things are that bad, you know that there's a guy that's crazy like he is. Well, that's what you got to worry about. That's what you got to worry about. It's a very, very scary situation. Well, we got 6 days now, do we not, until the election? It seems like every time I pick up some information about this, it's more and more optimistic for Republicans. 10 Democrat-held congressional seats apparently have shifted in the Republican favor, according to the, and this is a liberal organization, the Cook Political Report. Their forecast on the House. As the midterms near, seats that were anticipated likely Democratic are now appearing vulnerable for Republicans and their ability to pick them up. And these are following spikes in violent crime, the raising of gas prices and consumer goods. The concern, here's one too, you know, the concern over education. Ever since the pandemic situation, it's brought out and highlighted how bad things can be right now with the teaching of our kids. And, of course, the southern border crisis. I mean, every one of the major issues right now. The Democrats seem to have fumbled the ball. In California's 9th District, Josh Harder, a Democrat, has been in the lead, but the race has shifted from likely Democrat to just lean Democrats. So a lot of these races where the Democrats at one point looked like shoo-ins are changing. Another one in California, 47th District, Katie Porter, a Democrat for the past 3 years, and it's moved from lean Democrat to a toss-up. Another one in California, Julia Brownlee in the 26th District, she's seeking a Democratic re-election. It's changed from solid Democrat to lean Democrat. So they're all shifting, and they're all shifting towards the right. That doesn't mean that the Republicans go win every one of them, hardly at all. But it does mean that it's going to be a lot closer where the Democrat had been favored. Same thing in Illinois. And these are two very blue states, California and Illinois. 14th District, Lauren Underwood, Democrat. She wants 2 more years. And that's shifted from likely to lean Democrat. In New Jersey, Andy Kim in the 3rd District, likely Democrat to lean Democrat. Tim Suozzi in New York, he decided not to seek re-election in the 3rd District. That's vulnerable for a GOP pickup. These are all, again, these are all Democratic states, blue states. So it's looking very good. Of course, you don't want, if you're a Republican, you don't want to lean back in your easy chair and say, we got it made. You got to get out there and you got to vote, that's for sure. All right, let us take our break. When we come back, Katie Tubb. You know that Biden knows his policies increase energy costs for Americans. We're going to find out why they want to hide it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on The Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday. This is our first broadcast in November. We thank you very much for being with us. And delighted to have Katie Tubb join us. She is a research fellow for energy, climate, and the environment at the Great Heritage Foundation. And she has an opinion piece in the Washington Times about how Biden really knows that his policies increase energy costs. In fact, they've got it buried in a big report from the Department of the Interior. Katie, welcome to Freedom Works.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. We all know, of course, if we just follow logic, that when Democrats like Biden want to stop fracking and they want to shut down pipelines and they want to shut down or make it harder for ANWR drilling, you know that eventually that's going to come back to haunt you. So they know this. But you're saying that they actually not only know it, but they make mention of it, only it's hard to find it, right?
Right. So I did a lot of digging in a Department of Interior report about the offshore lease plan that Interior is many months late in finalizing. This was supposed to be done back in June, and they're only on a draft version of the plan as it is right now. And if you look in that plan, it's like two different people wrote the report. You've got clearly the political direction that the administration wants to go, which is to offer no lease sales offshore, but then you've got what looks to be like the professional, you know, career bureaucrats who are crunching the numbers. It's very clear that they know withholding sales will increase prices and allowing lease sales will decrease prices. But, you know, it's unfortunate that you'd have to read a very long bureaucratic report to get that message and to get to what I would call numbers and useful information instead of, the campaign slogans of this administration.
Yeah, exactly. I get the impression that Biden must think that his constituents here are a bunch of suckers. Does he really think that they believe that what he does doesn't have anything to do with the cost of energy? I mean, really? And then he goes on, recently he's, you know, running around talking about how the big oil companies with their huge profits, and they're making record profits. And this is why gas prices are high, because the big oil, you know, he wants to infer that they're just sitting back and taking all of this money in. And, every once in a while, they make a phone call. Hey, why don't we raise the price of another 10 cents a gallon or something? I mean, does he really think that people buy into that?
Well, I can't make any claims about what he thinks or not, because, I think...
I know that.
That's another conversation.
It is.
But, it's interesting the way he's trying to frame this or reframe the conversation in his favor. He takes high gas prices and does two things with them. He says, look, this is the reason why we need to force a transition faster and harder to wind and solar. There's a lot of problems with that. That's a long conversation, but that is a total red herring. The other way he uses high gas prices is to say, look at these evil oil companies. It's all their fault. But But if you look at both of those sides of the conversation, I think there's a lot of policy decisions that President Biden is making that are actually much more responsible for the situation. He has made it no secret from day one of his administration that he does not see a future for oil or, natural gas or coal, for that matter. There's no future for them in this country as far as he is concerned. We can debate the merits on that. I think that's foolhardy, but that's what he's made as his policy agenda. And the consequence of that naturally shows up in prices. When you tell an industry you don't have a future here, what industry is going to, spend millions of dollars in infrastructure or hiring people to invest in the future of their company? So then you start to get scarcity, and then you start to get higher prices.
Exactly right.
Just an example of that, just to help put a number on that, the last seven quarters, oil and gas companies have actually seen their cost of operations go up every single quarter for the last seven quarters. And I think a lot of that actually has to do with the policy message they're hearing from the administration. So when we hear about, big oil, evil oil profits, the other piece to that equation is their costs have been going up and up and up.
Yeah, absolutely right. And when you when he comes into office, and one of the very first thing he does by an executive order is to shut down the construction of these pipelines. And because the price of energy and oil is a futures philosophy, that's immediately going to affect the cost, because this means that in the future, and these places, we buy oil based on what we think the future of the price will be. That immediately is affected.
Agreed, very much. I think that's a good point, and it's very helpful for Americans to understand that what they pay at the pump has a whole bunch of features to it. One of them being expectations of future supply. Producers and then the many pieces of the supply chain down to the consumer start to expect supply shortages, that's going to show up in prices. And that's also one of the beauties of a free market system, is it uses prices to clearly communicate to both consumers and producers, hey, we need more oil, we need less oil, we need to innovate, we need to change our behavior. So prices, I think, are such a genius part of the American system. I think what President Biden is trying to do with a radical energy transition is to say, we don't care what prices do or don't tell us. We want to force the market in the direction of wind, solar, renewables, electric vehicles, regardless of prices, regardless of what consumers want.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's where we come into a lot of problems that have a ripple effect through the economy.
We're talking with Katie Tubbs. She is a research fellow for energy, climate, and the environment at the Heritage Foundation, and we're talking about how the Biden administration really knows that their policy increase energy prices. Katie, we've talked about this before, but because you delve into the environment along with energy, climate change and all of that kind of thing, the green utopia that the environmentalists that want to shut down current fossil fuels and the like, do they not realize, or do they not understand, that if you allow the private sector to do all of this themselves, that they will arrive at solar power and green energy and all of these other things so much quicker and so much more efficiently and so much cheaper than when you have a third-party government get in the middle of the, the oil companies or the Exxons or the, whatever you want to call them, and then say, look, we're gonna hinder your ability to do what you are doing right now because we want you to go in the other direction. That doesn't really work the right way, does it?
No, but I think what they want is they're basically saying we want these things by a certain timeline. We want technology to evolve, whole industries and sectors of the economy to evolve on our political timelines. And I would call that a gamble where the stakes are people's businesses, homes, schools, hospitals. you know, anything that uses energy, that's what's being put on the table. So when, whether we're talking about U.S. politicians or the United Nations, you know, in a couple of days now, over 190 countries are going to get together for another climate summit where a lot of this is being discussed. They put on the table things like we need renewables by 2030. Well, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but that's a very arbitrary deadline that has nothing to do with things like affordability and reliability. And will those new technologies even meet the unique needs and demands of a hugely diverse energy sector? You know, the energy demands of a big industrial company producing, say, steel or petrochemicals is very different than what I use at home and what my risk tolerances are. But those are the kinds of things that get blown over with these political timelines and demands for X type of energy by X date.
Yeah, it's just, of course, they all get together and they wink and they nod and they make these dates, you know, which mean nothing. Of course, they're not going to mean really anything. And most of the countries go back and just continue to practice the things that they are practicing anyway, you know, without much thought. Let me ask you this. If the Republicans are able to take control of the House and maybe even the Senate, is there anything that they might be able to do, even though we've got a Democrat in the White House, to start bringing down the cost of energy? Or is it just no matter what you do, Biden's going to veto it no matter what? I mean, do you see any chance that energy prices could start to come down with some sort of political action?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it's a very good question. I think it's a challenging field for Republicans to play because President Biden has a very different idea of what energy policy should be. That said, you know, I think Congress should and can do quite a bit of oversight to put political pressure on this administration to do, at a minimum, just follow the law. I think another thing Congress can do, you know, this administration has pushed the outer limits of what is permissible by the law, and I think in many cases become lawless in how they have implemented laws when it comes to energy. So, you know, I think the Congress, if things change, could do a better job to tighten definitions, tighten timelines, tighten requirements in current law when it comes to, say, oil and gas lease sales on federal lands, federal waters, to actually force the administration to do what it is required to do under the law. And I think that does have implications for energy markets then, because it's a clearer signal of, okay, we've got this president who does not like oil, gas, coal, but we've got a Congress that is willing to uphold the law and to hold the administration to following faithfully the directions stipulated in law by Congress. So, you know, I think it's a very hard situation. You know, President Biden has put a lot of political cash into, I'll call it a net zero energy agenda. And it will be hard to get him to walk that back some. But I think there are things Congress can do, certainly to send productive signals to markets and to hold this administration accountable.
You made a very good answer on that. And we can only hope. Katie, my buddy and colleague Ed Davis has a question, I think, for you.
Hey, Katie, I was just wondering. This I can't wrap my brain around this whole thing with the recharging the electric cars. As the price of fossil fuels go up, won't it eventually affect these people that are having to charge, that are pulling into the Wawas or whatever to charge their electric cars, because the cost of electricity is going to go up? Because as we know, they're not. You pull up to Wawa, I don't see a field full of solar panels out there that's going to convert the sun into recharging your car. It's eventually going to come from fossil fuels. And to me, the other part is I don't understand. It's like, you know, listen, you're taking fossil fuels and you're converting it into electricity to charge the car. So you still need the fossil fuels. It's like saying we're not going to feed a baby from a jar anymore. We're going to use canned food.
Well, I think you're highlighting some of the ironies of President Biden's EV agenda. Is it matters, you know, if you're amped up about greenhouse gas emissions, it matters a lot where you're plugging your EV in and where that electricity is coming from. For a lot of the United States, that electricity comes from natural gas, coal, and nuclear, and then a smaller portion comes from renewable. So when you talk about greenhouse gas emissions and net zero and that kind of thing, EVs aren't exactly the surefire answer. But to your point, it's interesting that EVs, both the charging of them, but also the manufacturing of them, prices go up when conventional energy goes up. And it's because you can't build an electric vehicle using wind and solar electricity. You have to use, I'll call it firm, reliable energy, which is namely coal, oil, and natural gas. So when those go up, it's interesting for me to have watched companies like Rivian, Tesla, note that their production costs are going up, and it's because energy prices are going up, which has nothing to do with wind and solar, but everything to do with the energy fuels that power our economy. 68%, I think, of our total energy needs in the United States are met simply by natural gas and oil. Add about another 10%, 20% for coal. That's what powers our economy, and you can't get an easy replacement for that with wind and solar. And so that trickles into, ironically, things like EV production and EV charging.
Wow. You know, one other thing I just noticed, we might be running out of diesel fuel for trucks. Has anybody noticed that? I saw that the other day, and I go,
25-day supply.
What's going to go on there, Katie? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because it's an important conversation that needs more attention. And it needs more attention because, you know, I think we all notice when the price of gasoline goes up, and rightly so. But diesel is in some ways more of a barometer for what's happening economically, because if you think about it, diesel is what gets farm equipment going, trains, shipping, trucks. So pretty much anything in the economy that has to get from A to B is shipped using diesel. And so when diesel prices go up, the ripple effect is significant for consumers. And unfortunately, yes, we are looking into some pretty low supplies where we're below the five-year average for our inventories. And depending on where you are in the country, particularly the Northeast, we're well below those five-year averages.
So, I mean, is there any imminent problem with not having diesel fuel for the things you just mentioned? Or is that sort of a long, a long-term issue?
It all depends. I think the problem here is that our margin for error is getting smaller and smaller, such that if there is a problem, the consequences become much bigger. Part of that has to do with the global situation. For example, refineries in France were down for several weeks because of protests there, and that has ripple effects in a global fuel market. We had an outage here in the United States, an accident a couple of years ago that took off quite a bit of refining capacity. But those things happen. So when we have policies on top of that that make it very hard to either produce or transport diesel, we're adding many layers of difficulty onto what naturally happens, which is accidents or maintenance, or, you know, if you're in France, it's a given that there will be strikes. But I guess my point is that we've created, I think because of political and regulatory pressure, we've created a system where our margin for error is getting far too small, such that we're looking at situations like this, and now there's legitimate concern that we could have a real problem when it comes to diesel supply. I think one of the things Congress could do right off the bat to relieve some of that regulatory political pressure is to call off the renewable fuel standard. Compliance costs for refineries to meet the renewable fuel standard are at record highs right now, and it constrains what refineries can produce and how they produce it. So if we lift those burdens off, I think that would be a really good way to make that margin of error a little bit wider, so that we don't have to get so concerned about situations like this and have, I think, a better shot at filling those inventories and getting consumers the fuel that they need.
Indeed. It's a real pleasure to have talked with you today, Katie. Thank you so very much for your time. Such an important issue, and I look forward to the next time we chat.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for inviting me into the conversation.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. Thank you. Katie Tubb from the Heritage Foundation. Terrific. All right. Going to take our break when we come back. If Republicans do indeed take back the House and the Senate on Tuesday, it might be due to white suburban women. We are going to tell you why.
Then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. Please can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is Marine Wildlife Artist and Conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
Do you have questions about health insurance, life insurance, or Medicare? Then just ask Angela. That's right, just ask Angela every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Angela will discuss topics relating to individual, family, and group health insurance plans, Medicare Advantage, Medigap, supplemental plans, and much more. Find guidance in navigating the confusing world of health insurance on Just Ask Angela every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. and visit our website, justaskangela.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday, and you're going to have to change your viewing plans tonight, Ed, because President Biden's going to be on the air. He's going to deliver a speech in Washington. Let's see here. It's scheduled for 7 p.m. Eastern Time at the Columbus Club in Union Station in D.C., where he is going to address the threat of election deniers and those who seek to undermine faith in voting and democracy. So,
you know what?
I want you to make sure you watch it.
You know what? I don't have faith in. I just saw that Philadelphia is already bracing for their voting to be overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed?
In other words, it's going to be a long count, is what they're saying.
In other words, we're going to not...
In other words, it could be a week.
Yeah, I was just going to say. And we have here, at least in Florida, and I'm not a big fan of mail-in voting, but at least in Florida, they start counting the votes as soon as they are.
How did we get by all those other years?
I know.
Getting it done overnight. We knew the next... We knew that night.
Because we do start the count earlier, right away. We start counting... And then when election day comes, we've already counted. But I don't think they do that in Pennsylvania. They wait till everyone is in, and then they start counting.
Well, then they should have a staff for that, no?
Of course they should. Yeah. And I always worry about Pennsylvania in terms of the authenticity of the vote there, especially Philadelphia. We've talked about this before. Years ago, when Romney was running against Barack Obama, I saw the report of a couple of precincts in the inner city of Philadelphia where it was like X hundred thousand votes, all of them going for Barack Obama. Not one vote.
Wow.
Not one vote in all of them. So I'm going, for Romney. So I'm going, come on.
When you have ballots.
Even by accident, somebody would have voted in that many votes for Romney.
When you have ballots sitting there overnight, uncounted, it creates doubt.
Exactly right.
Okay, and that's
another issue too.
Because that gives you time to do, if you're going to screw with something, you have time to do it. Whereas if it's a rapid fire and it's out in the open and we're counting and everybody, there's cameras, whatever, you get it all done, and by the end of the night you send your count in, and
well,
that's
you're
it.
you're making my case for a day of that you physically go in, you vote in your little booth, and you put it in the box, and it's right there, and they count it right away that night. You know, I mean, that you're making the case for it. You get into the mail-in voting, you get into the early voting, you're right. You got these things sitting around. Also, with mail-in voting, how many different people are handling your vote, your ballot, on the way to the person that's supposed to actually count it, right? So between all of those hands that are holding it when you mail it in, I always worry that something's going to go wrong, even if it isn't intentional. So anyway, white suburban women, a key group of midterm voters, have significantly shifted their support from Democrats to Republicans in the closing days of this election. And mainly, this is the Wall Street Journal saying this, mainly because of rising concerns over the economy and inflation. So they get it, apparently. The new survey, this is a Wall Street Journal survey, it shows that white women living in the suburbs, who make up 20% of the electorate, now favor Republicans by 15 points. That's moving 27 points away from the Democrats since August. 27 points since August. So they've really made a quick shift over to the Republicans. And my goodness, that can be a key factor in this election. We've talked about Hispanics, and the Hispanic shift has been almost similar. They're still, Hispanics are still overall going to vote Democratic, but it's getting a lot closer, mm-hmm. especially here in Florida. I think the Hispanic vote might go for, as an example, for DeSantis, the Republican, for governor. Don't you? I'm thinking there's a good chance, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get to tell you that Anna Paulina Luna was on one of our shows Monday night.
She was? On our station?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
And she's endorsed by Trump. You know that, right?
Yes,
she's running for Charlie Crist's old seat.
Exactly right.
She actually said, quote, and I can pull it up, she actually said that when the midterms are done, that's when Donald Trump will announce his candidacy for president.
Yeah.
So I said, well, are you saying, and she did, she said he's going to run.
I believe it. I think he's waiting, too. And I think he's probably wise not to have injected himself into this election. And that he's been wise, maybe it's because they've almost muffled him, as far as Republicans are concerned, to not get out there. He is going to be somewhere tonight making a speech on behalf of some Republican. But it's not like he's dominating, in the last couple of weeks. He's not been dominating the cameras. He's been kind of quiet.
Well, at least Biden's smart, or his staff is smart enough to get the speech over before the World Series starts at 8 o'clock.
By the way,
can you imagine if he bumped that in Philadelphia?
He was down here in Florida yesterday on behalf of Charlie Crist.
And he didn't stop by?
And on behalf of who's running against?
Eric Lynn?
No. Who's running against, against Marco Rubio?
Oh.
Val Demme. Okay. So he's down here. Did you see Val Demme?
No.
Or did you see Charlie Crist standing next to him?
No.
He was by himself. He came down and he was endorsing them.
Yeah.
But they weren't there. I don't think. I may be wrong, but I don't think they were there.
Did he go to the wrong party?
Not only that, I'm thinking that DeSantis might have paid his fare to come down here and show up and come out publicly and endorse them, because he figures that he'll add to his lead. Hmm. Same thing with Marco Rubio. They probably both encouraged Biden to show up. That's what I'm beginning to think. Just crazy. Crazy, crazy. All right. Let's take our final break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to talk about a huge merger in the publishing world that might get stopped, and we're going to tell you the top 10 best places to retire to next year.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the great Tantalk Radio Network. We thank you for listening to us. And thanks to Big Ed. If you can't listen to us live, you can go to our website because he's got our shows on tape, on podcast. Go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Look for the podcast button at the top, and Ed's got all the shows, most recent ones at the top. You'll see who the guest is and our top 10, OurFreedomWorks.com. By the way, when Biden was here yesterday, he warned Floridians that Social Security and Medicare would be repealed by the GOP if they get in. You know that claim garnered four Pinocchios from the Washington Post? They keep lying about the fact that Republicans are going to cut out your Social Security and Medicare. Why would they do that? There are people there that would like to make sure it will exist for a while longer. And there are people in the long run would probably say, we could do it better than having the government running it, but they don't have any plans to cut Social Security or Medicare. They're not that crazy. It's really funny to hear the finally, the Washington Post, which is no conservative newspaper, far left. It's a far lefty newspaper. Gave them four Pinocchios. All right. So, those of you that like to read know about Penguin Publishing, Random House, and Simon & Schuster, right? They've been around forever. Well, a federal judge blocked Penguin and Random House's move to acquire Simon & Schuster. And the Biden administration was behind trying to keep that sale from going through. The ruling, which comes after a three-week-long trial, would significantly impact the publishing industry. Now, the it's now Penguin Random House. I guess at one time Penguin was, independent of Random House, but anyway, they are one now. And this case apparently is seen as a precedent for mergers and acquisitions at large under the Biden administration. Penguin Random House is the largest publisher in the U.S. Simon & Schuster is the fourth largest. Now, you know, let's be honest. Books and reading materials are not as popular as they used to be. We've got, with the internet and everything else going on, the sad fact is that people are not reading as much as they used to. So these companies, to keep profitable, need to consider merging together. I've never thought that the government should ever interfere with companies that want to merge. It's none of their business. It's none of their business. Because if they merge, The argument is, well, if they merge, we've got two giants that are now making it less competitive. Well, no, not necessarily. When these companies merge, there are other entrepreneurs, other companies that end up filling in and taking their place. You don't end up losing publishing companies in the long run. It provides an outlet, though, when mergers occur, for other companies to get into the business as well. Anyway, this is the judge that wrote the opinion that is not allowing the merger. She is Florence Pan, and she wrote in her order that the Department of Justice, which sued to stop this thing, has successfully shown that the $2.2 billion merger could substantially lessen competition in the market. Believe me, the only entity that slows down other companies from coming along and blossoming into the free market is the government. I think it was Milton Friedman that once said that the only monopoly is when the government is involved in regulating that industry. That's where you get a monopoly. You won't have a monopoly if the government stays out of it. So there you go. All right. I want to, before we get to our top 10, we have a good top 10, Ed, I think. But before we get to our top 10, Ed, you remember, I know you're not a fan of the Houston Astros. Now, they lost big time to the Philadelphia Phillies last night. And it turns out, did you read this? That Lance McCullers, he was the Astros pitcher last night, was giving away what he was going to throw these batters. And apparently, if you believe this, the Phillies caught on early. Did you know that the Phillies scored like 7 runs early in that game, right? It says here, the Phillies jumped on Lance McCullers in the game. And it was because of the way he was delivering the pitch.
Did you see that? I saw 2 home runs.
They were watching.
They were close to each other.
Yes. They were apparently saying that his leg kick was what was giving away what he was going to throw. And that that's why they jumped on him so quickly and scored so many runs right away.
You'd think the whole season of a guy pitching that somebody else would have picked up on that.
Exactly right.
And not wait till the World Series.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think so. But maybe he started changing his emotion recently or something. But there you go. Very interesting. I'm trying to see if there's anything else on this. A guy by the name of Steve Johnson, who goes by Leg Kick Nation on his social media platform, suggests that the problem with McCullen was that his leg kick was tipping pitches for Phillies batters.
I mean, you see that in a lot.
I don't know. I mean, this is all.
You see that in a lot of sports, you know, with football,
with
linemen when they lean to the left, yes, lean to the right, and mm-hmm, its tendencies. How much film you study? You know,
sure. Maybe a quarterback as he approaches center is looking in one direction or something.
Yeah,
exactly right. But I remember.
But I did see 2 home runs back. They weren't quite back to back. I think it was 3. It was 2-0. And I saw the 3rd and then the 4th home run, and they were in the same inning.
Yeah, it was early, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I know that you have accused the Houston Astros. Well, you haven't. It's not you.
Well,
for cheating.
They were caught cheating.
Caught cheating.
The manager was fired.
Yes.
And suspended.
Exactly right. Exactly. So I know you haven't gotten over it, and I think you have made a good point, but do you think that this is kind of a nice fair play turnabout here?
I said I like the Phillies. I like the Phillies to win because they train in Clearwater.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and so far, it's looking good for them.
Yeah,
they're up 2-1. All right, it's time for our top 10. This is from the U.S. News and World Report, and these are the top 10 best places to retire to, if I can find it, in 2023. Here they are. Now the criteria included the happiness of local residents, housing affordability, tax rates, and health care quality, which is important for senior citizens. So here we go. These are the cities and towns that are the 10 best to retire to next year, 2023. Number 10. How about Reading, Pennsylvania? You ever been there yet?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
You love it?
No.
Would you retire there?
No, it's cold.
The metro area is home to the real-life Reading Railroad.
Reading Railroad.
From the Monopoly game.
Yeah.
Along with glimpses into the Allegheny Aqueduct and more than 100-year-old seven-story pagoda that overlooks the mountain. All right, well, that's enough reason for me to go and retire there, right there, that pagoda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number 9. How about Allentown, Pennsylvania? Sounds like Pennsylvania must be a tropical paradise. Much of the charm in Pennsylvania's third-largest metro area comes from its vast collection of historic homes and buildings. I'm not so sure I'd retire because somebody has a
close
sword.
To the groundhog again, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Number 8. You know, these are all kind of cold areas. Ann Arbor, Michigan? How about Ann Arbor?
Retire?
Yeah. It is at once rural and urban, sporty and smart. University of Michigan is there.
Good deal.
Good counterculture, high society. All right.
Unless you went to the University of Michigan, who cares?
Exactly. Yeah. Number 7. Well, now this makes more sense. Daytona Beach, Florida.
Yeah.
All right. Many things make Daytona Beach a popular place. It's a good place for fishing. You can watch a lot of car racing there.
And drive on the beach.
You can drive on the beach. You can have a yacht. All right, we understand that. Number 6. Now this one for sure, Naples, Florida. Naples is, some people call it the Palm Beach of the west coast of Florida. Nestled between the Everglades and the shores of the Gulf of Mexico, Naples, beautiful area. Number 5. Hey, it's back to Pennsylvania, Ed. York, good old York, Pennsylvania. You ever been there?
No.
York may not have a towering skyline, but when it comes to historical punching power, this small metro area, dubbed the White Rose City in reference to the symbol of England's House of York more, the House of York, excuse me, more than holds its own. All right, number 4. Tampa.
Oh.
Yeah, Tampa, Florida. Residents of Tampa Bay area enjoy both a laid-back beach lifestyle and the amenities of a large metro area. Number 3. Pennsylvania again.
Oh, come on.
I'm not kidding.
All right, this guy, whoever did this,
I know.
Obviously he's got something for Pennsylvania.
No question. It was, but
why don't you just make a brochure out of it, for crying out loud?
Well, you hear what's number 1. But anyway, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is number 2.
Boy.
Great outdoors, easily accessible, and good old, beautiful Harrisburg. All right.
How about in January?
All right, roll the drum. Number 1.
Oh, number 1?
Yeah. Drum roll. Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, come on. Are you sure you didn't get the Pennsylvania vacation brochure?
I'm beginning to think the Chamber of Commerce made the top 10 here.
And when you don't want to go there, you stop in Daytona.
It offers a balance between natural and commercial spaces that residents appreciate. I don't know what
the hell
they're talking
about. I don't know anybody
that
would tell me I'm retiring to Pennsylvania.
Well, maybe if you lived in New Jersey, you would. It's very close by. All right, thank you so very much. Folks, we are going to be gone for a week. We'll not be back until, if my memory serves right, November 14th, Monday, November 14th. Going to be away for a while. You'd be good, and remember, freedom works.
Well, I say, come on over, baby. We got chicken in the corner.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Borrowing money is about to get even more expensive. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates today, this time by 0.75%. The goal, to bring down the worst inflation in 40 years. But it's pushed mortgage rates above 7%. Correspondent Nancy Chen spoke to one man who's in a bind.
For about a year, Andrew Till tried to sell his New Jersey home in search of more space.
It's like every weekend, our broker calling and saying, can you get out?
But even after 10 lucrative offers, he and his family took it off the market. He says there are a few options for them to buy a new